it's obviously been a long process, as you've said, and we've mentioned, you know, 25, 30 years, and then last sort of 5, 6, maybe beginning to think about a book. As you've neared, or beginning to near the final stride, if you like, in this race, and having the book actually be published, has it been an easy thing or a difficult thing? Have you had a vision of what your book would be, or has it been this very abstract, anonymous item almost?
Well, I really have had a vision of what I wanted it to be. It was really once I got started on trying to convert experience and thoughts into a book, it was a process of sort of segmenting the features of my experience with nature. And I knew that I wanted to have, for example, individual chapters on birds and mammals, trees, rocks, water, darkness, prairie, natural history, human history, all of these features that are so important in the ecosystem of which I'm part. And so then it became a matter of segmenting what was really a sort of seamless web, and then fleshing out the features, and then ultimately trying to tie them all back together in a way that made sense for other people.
Well, again, as we're real close now, it's we're expecting page proofs back here fairly soon, and it'll go to the printer, and it'll be out this summer. What are you most looking forward to, you know, when your book comes out?
I think I really look forward to sharing the ideas in Waiting for Coyotes to Call with readers and potential readers, both readers who are actively engaged in the book and people who maybe haven't read the book but might be interested in some of the ideas, and I look forward to sharing these ideas and getting their responses through whatever form the book might open up for me.
But how do you think your readers will respond to some of the goals and wishes that you describe in the book?
I don't expect everybody to agree with my ideas. In fact, on the contrary, I know that in the modern world, there are many people who are somewhat estranged from nature. They have forgotten that we are citizens of an ecological community rather than masters of it, and they go about their lives in ways that are, I'm afraid, sometimes a bit oblivious to our obligations and our responsibilities for helping to sustain this ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hope, of course, to make such folks think a little bit more deeply about their role in the natural world. On the other hand, I know that I'm somewhat critical of certain aspects of modern life in America that I think are antithetical to sustaining our future. We cannot go on consuming energy as we are in the present, particularly fossil fuels. We must begin to move, towards in new directions, towards alternative fuels that are sustainable. These sorts of things are not necessarily popular ideas. They're growing. More and more people are thinking about them.
Sure.
But I do think that there will be some people who will not necessarily relate to my experience and my take on that experience.
Okay, so you have this great thesis that runs throughout about ecological sustainability and environmental sustainability. What aspects of your own homeland life would you, if you could, would you change so as to best fit into that thesis?
Well, first of all, I think that we're all responsible as human beings for somewhat fouling our own nest, depleting our resources, even altering our climate, and I'm guilty of aspects of my life, too, that need to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
Where I have attempted to better fit into my lifestyle, into my belief system, and my thesis of sustainability, living on the land, a lot of what I've done is experimentation and trial and error. And when you do that sort of thing, you produce a lot of error, and I've made my share of errors, whether it be in attempts to restore native prairie or attempts to cut my energy consumption and so on. Sometimes you realize that
refer to you refer to Walden Pond, and so if you like, this is, in a way, it's a modern South Dakota version of Thoreau's great work. So how does the possibility of having a Wilson rather than a Walden Pond strike you?
Well, it's always flattering to be compared in any way to Thoreau, and I don't think I'm in his class as a writer, but I think that we share many thoughts and many values, and we do have a couple of ponds here in our place that I enjoy very much. But I do feel that I live in a kind of Edenic setting here. Mm-hmm. We're very privileged to live here on the Missouri River Bluff, where we have some beautiful land and a lot of wildlife and quiet and dark skies at night and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I do think that what I'd like to emphasize is that all human beings, at least in varying degrees, and especially we privileged modern Americans, do have the possibility of having our own Walden Pond if we but recognize it. Even people in cities and towns can feed and get to know the birds.
Mm-hmm.
They can grow some of their food in the backyard. They can recycle, hike and cross-country ski. They can lie in the grass, go out and find the night sky. They can invest themselves in nature and find what she has to teach. And I don't think you have to be in any particular place to do that.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I do. In a way, that actually leads me to what I guess will be our final question. And perhaps it's the same answer. We'll find out, I suppose. I like to ask our authors if there's sort of one thing, and it's not always an easy thing to come up with, I suppose, one. But if there's one thing you'd like your prospective readers to be aware of or to think about when reading Waiting for Coyote's Call, what would that be?
Well, I guess it's that many of our actions and lifestyle choices are not sustainable. But that the Earth, planet Earth, is sustainable if we take care. And that, I believe, is our highest moral obligation, to contribute in every way we can to help sustain the ecological community of which we're part. We need an increased awareness that we share the Earth with fellow creatures, and that, all as the Native Americans have always been aware, all of creation is sacred, and we should, I think, view it that way, and try to minimize our exploitation, our abuse and overuse, our consumption of non-renewable resources, that nature herself can teach us the lessons we need to learn if we will just open our eyes and our hearts and live with nature instead of against her. If we learn to better look and listen and think and learn.
Well, I think if we can follow those kind of guidelines, and perhaps we can all do a little bit, then we'll get closer to where you and Waiting for Coyote's Call would like us to be, and hopefully where we'd all like to be.
Well, I hope so.
Well, thanks, Jerry. Thanks for answering these few questions, and we're really looking forward to the book coming out here, and I'm sure you are, and we'll keep listeners and visitors to our website aware of publication dates, and congratulations.
Well, thank you, Martin, and thanks for the good questions. I've enjoyed visiting with you about Waiting for Coyote's Call, and I'm really excited that the South Dakota Historical Society Press will be putting it out, and I'm looking forward to seeing it this week.